It's officially 2026, and my New Year's resolution is to prioritize high-quality pieces in my wardrobe. Thanks to Quince, I can already check that off my list. I'm already planning outfits around my new cotton Oxford shirt. It's such a classic, timeless piece that I know I'll be rewearing all year. Need more than just a wardrobe update? Quince has tons of options for the home as well. Maya has had the same dinnerware since college and has finally decided it's time for a refresh, starting with a gorgeous set of ceramic cake plates. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Don't wait. Go to quince.com/rehash for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/rehash to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rehash.
I'm so groggy today.
Yeah, why is that, bitch?
I don't know. I slept for like 9 hours, which is very rare for me. And I woke up and I was like, what the fuck? I just feel terrible.
I'm sorry.
I'm like in a fog and I don't know why. Something's seriously wrong.
Something's seriously wrong. I think these mornings just happen. We are like in a very gray time.
I know. It's funny because we talked about this last episode and, you know, I said it aspirationally. I was like, it's gray outside today. And I said that with the hopes that tomorrow it wouldn't be. And yet here we are.
I mean, welcome to March in Canada, am I right?
March
Canadian
is,
problems?
March is the most insidious month.
March is a jerk.
Because you think it's going to be getting warmer, and then in Toronto recently, it's just been, because global warming, it's been like December and November, you barely get any snow at all.
Yeah.
January, you get some snow, and then February, it hits really hard, and then March, it hits even harder, and you're like, you gotta calm down.
And March is temperamental because there are warmer moments.
You get used to it and then it snatches it away from you.
Yes. But come on, we're just pushing through till April. We're halfway through the month.
Hannah and I are going to Portugal in May.
Yeah.
We just booked the trip.
Well, we haven't actually booked our flights yet, so let's pray to God we can afford.
I know, we booked the accommodations before the flight, which I actually don't know if that's smart.
We're like, maybe the flight prices will go down.
Well, it's more just that like Airbnbs are scarce. So yeah. It's kind of like you know that they're going to go away, whereas like a flight will always be there.
Yeah.
This is probably stupid.
But we're young. Young people are supposed to be stupid and
yeah,
travel.
We're idiots. I went to Europe in 2018 and the way I planned the trip, like I thought I was a genius for the way I planned it, and it was so stupid. Like we went to this beach town in the south of Portugal and then we planned to go from there to Paris. There was no flight that we had booked in the area that we were in, so we had to take a train at 5 a.m, like a local train all the way to a different city, and then take an official train to another city just to get to the airport. And then we had like a layover, and then we ended up flying 2 hours out of Paris, and we didn't realize we had done that because we didn't know how Paris worked.
Aww.
So we had to take a 2-hour bus ride at like 8 p.m.
Paris worked.
We like didn't understand how far things were from the city, basically.
This summer I was doing a train trip around Europe. I was backpacking and I went from Florence to Amsterdam. Like I planned to fly out of Amsterdam and then did a detour all the way in Florence and was like, honestly, that'll be a great train ride. I was on the train for 24 hours.
It was absolutely brutal. And I was in Florence with Hannah too. And yeah, we said bye to each other. Hannah said she was backpacking. Her backpack was quite literally the size of her body. Like it was crazy.
Yeah, it was. I was always at risk of like falling over.
I know you were. Always, I was always tempted to push you. It's like you would have fallen. You would always kind of sway when you got it up on your body. I don't know how you did that.
Well, look, the great thing about backpacking backpacks is they've got straps, they've got poles, they've got things to make it easier. And I think it was a backpacking backpack for girls, so it like specifically rested on your hips
for your snatched waist.
Who are you?
I'm Maya. I'm groggy.
No.
How about you?
I'm not groggy. I'm actually just like a bit of an anxious wreck right now, but for no good reason.
Something about Sundays. I don't know.
Yeah, I just also have like Chihuahua and a thunderstorm energy like half the time, if I'm being completely honest with myself and everybody listening.
You hide it pretty well.
That's not true, but thank
I know,
you.
I'm being
You're
pretty
being
nice.
Really,
I'm sorry that you feel anxious. That's not fun.
Oh, it's okay. This is just life, you know? And it's March.
We are going to an Oscars party tonight, though.
We're watching the Oscars. Is it an Oscars party?
I would call... Oh, yeah, that sounded awful. Yeah, we're going to watch the Oscars at our friend's place, which I love that. I actually really wanted to just not watch the Oscars this year because I could not give a shit.
Yeah.
And I usually do give a shit. Like, this is coming from someone who actually kind of likes the Oscars half the time.
For me, it's like every year I'm disappointed by the Oscars, but every year I come back and like Charlie Brown in the football because I really just like showbiz.
This is the second time I've heard a Charlie Brown analogy with a football this morning. Yeah, someone said that somewhere on social media this morning.
Oh.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
That's crazy. And this is Rehash, a podcast about the social media phenomenons that strike a nerve in our culture only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is all about internet archetypes and the many, many lives that they live. If you like our show and you want to hear more from us, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rehashpodcast. That's where we have monthly bonus episodes, weekly mini episodes, and early access to our regular programming. If you don't want to join the Patreon, feel free to rate or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify because that really helps. We also are on Instagram now at RehashPod, so if you want to follow us there, you should.
We haven't really figured out what we're going to say on the Instagram because I don't think either of us would be adept at making memes.
I don't know how to do Instagram good. Okay, Maya, what are we talking about today?
Himbos. I'm excited because I feel like this is not that I think we ever talk about very serious subject matter ever, but this feels like the least serious in the best way.
It's the silliest, and even when you are drawing like more political messaging from it, which I'm trying to make it not political, but like have deeper commentary, you're still like, when you take a step back, you're like, I am talking about himbos.
But I think it'll be fun. It's nice to just talk about something famously dumb.
Famously dumb. So himbo is a portmanteau of him and bimbo, which means, according to Merriam-Webster, because it's in Merriam-Webster, an attractive but vacuous man. The word itself dates back to 1988, but blew up online a few years back. So like a lot of internet buzzwords, it seems like people were talking about himbos on Tumblr first. You know, users would be making charts about what characters exemplify what traits of himbos and, you know, in communities where people are talking about fan culture. I think that word came up a bunch because it's like a trope. I personally didn't learn what a himbo was until 2020 when I finally downloaded TikTok and my algorithm was still kind of figuring out what I wanted. And so my For You page would be a ton of like pop culture related stuff or shows I didn't really watch that kind of felt Tumblr-y. So there'd be fan cams of like, wow, like my favorite himbos, and it would be the guys from New Girl or like Keanu Reeves and stuff.
Oh, Schmidt.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous because my algorithm when it was trying to figure out what I liked was just Republican. Like, it was crazy. It was terrible. It was like Republicans and incels and sometimes both. I was like, TikTok is not a chill environment for me.
But my TikTok was really like, you must want to hear about a bunch of 18-year-olds who have a crush on Logan Lerman all the time. I was like,
me at 18.
On the videos, I would say there'd always be these really infantilizing captions like, he's so pure, or truly like the best kind of guy, or my favorite type of character is a himbo. And I don't know, it always felt really strange to me.
It's odd to talk about someone who's like older than you, most likely, in a kind of paternalistic way.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. When did you first come across the word himbo?
I think it was in like 2018, 17 around, wow. Or no, maybe a little bit later with Noah Centineo, because he had this really short wave where everyone loved him, and then he quickly became a little too much for everyone. And it was in between, I think, those two phases when people started referring to him as a himbo, because like he'd go into interviews and try so hard to sound so smart, and like his captions too, and they were always so vapid.
Really? Okay, I gotta say, I've never watched a Noah Centineo interview in my life.
I was gonna say, you've definitely seen The Kissing Booth.
Oh, he's not in The Kissing Booth. That's Jacob Elordi.
How is he not in the kissing booth? Because that's so weird.
To All the Boys I Loved Before, he's in like all the other Netflix like teen rom-coms.
That's crazy. For some reason, I really thought he had some role in the kissing booth.
I mean, maybe they should do like a multiverse.
They really should. I mean, honestly, all the guys from those movies end up kind of looking the same. They all have that like one haircut.
I know, even Jacob Elordi.
He looks bad.
Yeah.
In that, and he's a good looking guy, so.
Can you list off any men that you would consider himbos in your real life?
In my real life, know, just the guys we know?
Yeah.
You're stupid.
Which of our friends are idiots?
I mean, Brendan Fraser is kind of the first person who comes to mind, just because I really feel like he's been described as the archetypal himbo. And then I just keep thinking about Joey from Friends as like the immediate person I go to, but he's not a real person.
No. But I think you can talk about characters too, because he is brought up quite literally in every single like roundup of himbos.
And Ethan from Lizzie McGuire.
Ooh, never gets brought up. I never.
Early himbo. Because that guy, he's such a sweetie, but he's like so stupid.
I would definitely say Brendan Fraser and Keanu Reeves were like the 90s himbos. I was researching this episode and I found an article that was reviewing George of the Jungle and basically was like, Brendan Fraser's being really typecasted in this himbo role and like this might damage his career to keep doing this part. And then with Keanu, I read this GQ interview from 2000. It just talks about how unbelievably difficult it is to talk to him because he just takes so long to answer and he's so slow and has nothing like deep to say.
Listen, I think Keanu's just shy.
I think he might, yeah, just be a private guy and also like doesn't need to bare his soul to Rolling Stone.
You know what? Someone actually had a really good take on Keanu. And I say someone, and by someone I mean Francis Ford Coppola.
My old pal.
I watched Dracula around Halloween last year, the 90s one. First of all, I love that movie. I think it's amazing. But whatever, little plug for Francis Ford Coppola. And Keanu Reeves is like widely panned. His performance is genuinely pretty awful in the movie.
Yeah.
He's trying to do this British accent and it comes out alien. You're like, what is going on? He's just so out of the scene. Like, he is not embodied. He is not in the moment. And Francis Ford Coppola defended him and was just kind of like, I really feel like Keanu really wanted to do service to this role and thought about it so hard that he couldn't actually bring it to the fore. He was thinking.
His earlier notable works were kind of marked by the airhead kind of character type.
But like, then it makes you feel like he knows what he... Because even with Point Break, it's so knowing, well, the performance.
Like Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
Which I love Bill and Ted movies. And yeah, Point Break, where he's described as young, dumb, and full of cum.
I mean, not just him, all young men.
True.
Or like, was it like Rookies on the Job?
Yeah, he's like, oh, this Johnny Utah guy, like, I know his type.
Young, dumb, and full of cum.
I don't know Keanu personally. I can't tell you how smart he is.
And the bar is in hell, but love him for having dated a woman his age who
she's
looks her
age. She's younger than him.
Oh my God. And
she's in her 40s.
Do you guys remember when Keanu dated this woman who literally looks like a woman close to his age? This man's like 50. And everyone was like, who is that old saggy hag he keeps bringing to the carpet? She's beautiful, first of all.
He's also in his late 50s.
Yeah, he's...
He's my dad's age.
What?
They were friends.
Are you going to drop that?
I don't know.
Guys, Keanu Reeves went to our high school. So it's actually, it's kind of like a bit of a conflict of interest for us to be talking about him right now.
He also did go to middle school with my dad and they were friends.
Wow. What was that experience like for your dad?
My dad says that he felt like they were close because Keanu told him what his name meant. And he was like one of the first people that he told that to or something.
And your dad was like, damn.
But he doubts that he remembers him to this day.
I think a lot has happened in Keanu's life.
It's been a while.
Well, as two Point Break fans ourselves, I feel like to be able to do that performance, you have to have some level of knowledge of what you're putting out.
Yeah.
Because it's so over the top stupid. I don't know. I just think he's shy.
Why do we need our actors to be geniuses? I think too many actors care about being perceived as geniuses. And it's nice to have someone who's like a quiet, maybe more pensive or less pensive type. I don't know.
We literally live in a world where actors are the be-all, end-all political opinions of our society. And it's truly, like, if you've met an actor in real life half the time, something's wrong.
Some other sort of examples of himbos would be, like, Channing Tatum gets brought up a bunch.
Whoa, I would never consider him a himbo.
But I would say his character in, like, She's the Man is himbo-y.
Oh, that's true. I was too blinded by horniness for him that I couldn't have.
But, like, him with the tampon in his nose is, like, it's, like, so...
I know, and he's really sweet and gentle in those movies.
I love him. Kronk from The Emperor's New Groove.
That is the best himbo. It's a great movie. I actually rewatched it in the pandemic, and I was like, this is so fun. And, like, Eartha Kitt, defining role.
She plays the villain?
She's Yzma.
I didn't know that.
She's like, pull the lever, Kronk. That was how I grew up knowing her, was as Yzma.
I would also say, like, Chris Hemsworth plays a lot of himbo-y roles. Him as Thor is himbo-y. Him in, like, that Ghostbusters movie, who's just, like, a hot, dumb guy.
I find it funny that you've seen either of those.
Okay, whatever.
You like Thor, though, I think, right?
Yes, I've seen a lot of Marvel movies.
I haven't seen Thor. I actually haven't seen
the Thor movie, well, oh my god, I actually don't want to expose myself as a lame nerd.
A slame nerd.
Thor is often the comic relief in a lot of the Marvel movies. He's supposed to be, like, kind of hot and dumb.
A big dumb hottie.
Chris Hughes from Love Island, I feel like. People bring up the guys on Love Island generally a lot.
Love Island is himbo town.
It's himbo town.
You think Chris Hughes over some of the other guys? Chris never struck me as that dumb. I thought he was really witty, actually. He reminded me of the British guys I was friends with in school. Like, he felt kind of like a flirty, witty weirdo.
Who do you think is a himbo from Love Island?
Chris could get himbo because he was likable, but for me, I don't think his IQ was low enough, even just by watching him, to consider him one. For me, I thought he was so funny.
Just remembering him with the baby.
It's like a ritual each season that they have to do. Each couple has to hear this fake baby that, like, cries.
Yeah.
And he finds himself crying, and he's like, why am I crying? And he was like, I'm crying because I love the baby.
He named the baby Cash, so his name would be Cash Hughes.
Yeah.
And his partner Olivia was like,
who's like the famous bitch of the season,
but she,
who,
like,
we love.
She's someone who looks like a bimbo, but she's actually quite smart, and she was just like, she was like, I can't deal with this guy. Anyways, that was so many detours, but,
and they're always related to reality shows.
So we're gonna go back to the 1988 Washington Post article that coined the term himbos. And the article is called "The Himbo, All Powerful and All Beef. It's the Real Men," like, 3 exclamation marks, all capitals, the whole thing. And it's by a writer named Rita Kempley. So in this article, Kempley is reporting on, like, the new or relatively new phenomenon at the time of male film and television stars being used as eye candy for female audiences. Basically the way that women had always been. Mm-hmm. And she outlined 2 sub-archetypes of the himbo in her article. The himbo erectus and the himbo, bo is spelled B-E-A-U, sapien.
Like himbo.
Yeah. And so we're going to take a look at each of them and also just how they connect to, like, modern versions of the himbo. So the first, himbo erectus. The himbo erectus can be seen within, like, the hard body film genre of the 1980s. So action movie characters who Kempley describes as infantile Neanderthals. She's like, they're pure testosterone, just male essence.
Like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Exactly. So the actors playing them often have, like, backgrounds in bodybuilding or fighting. So it'd be like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, Jean-Claude Van Damme. Ripped action movies. The men in hard body films are exceptionally buff, and they often appear with very little clothing. They might even be, like, oiled, they're hairless, and they're sort of there to some extent to be ogled at.
Mm-hmm. By other men.
Well, yeah. So action movies in this area and their depictions of hypermasculinity have been, like, a big subject in film scholarship. Maya, you did a whole video on this.
I did. It was really one of the more fun videos I feel like I got to make. It's fun to, like, look at a canon and kind of be like, how has this evolved over time? Basically what we're doing now.
Yeah. I mean, and if you have any, like, of your own insights or anything that you want to share along this way.
The video is mainly just talking about how these movies are trying to espouse this, like, Reagan era idea of, like, masculinity. But when you really think about who action movies are made for, it's for men. And so when you watch these movies, you you realize that there is like a very clear tone of homoeroticism running throughout them that Point Break takes and actually brings to the forefront and uses that to explore male friendships and relationships.
Yeah, it's a beautiful movie.
It is. It's very majestic.
I love Point Break. And something that's like pointed out a lot in this scholarship and in Kempley's own article is that the male body in action movies is like really eroticized by the camera. You know, you get these intense close-ups. We're really seeing it like on display. And also, like you said, there is argument for like an inherent homoeroticism because it's made by men for men. And like whether it was intentional or not, this also did create an overt form of like eye candy for the straight female viewer because men were being objectified, even if it was more that they were being objectified for like the sheer power of their bodies, these sculpted bodies. There's like the inadvertent gain for some women.
For some women.
Yeah.
Kempley makes sure to point out that these men in the himbo erectus category are like not really supposed to be read romantically or sexually. Like they're not available in that sense. Their main concern is whatever objective they have to like fulfill with their bodies. Again, they're more like spectacles than really somebody that you're trying to imagine in that kind of a romantic setting.
Yeah, their bodies are a tool to carry out whatever the mission is, basically.
Their internal lives are not really relevant to the story in that sense.
Yeah, I'm not thinking about what the Terminator has to say.
Well, he's quite literally a robot.
Politics. Although, I also haven't seen Terminator, so.
I will say Total Recall has slightly like political messaging, but then it got Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Well, Paul Verhoeven again, yeah. You know, saying something about society and using people's bodies to do it.
So these movies are basically like one of our best representations of the obsession with like the male form, which art forever has like explored and celebrated, like the perfect male body, mm-hmm. quote unquote. I'm not super attracted personally to like this beefcakey kind of look.
I know Love Island. While I'm watching Love Island, I slowly forget that this isn't my type, and I start to find people attractive because I'm like, oh, that's a person, but truly not my go-to.
But on Love Island, it's because you're getting to know the person underneath.
That's so beautiful.
But like, obviously, there are people that just do really like extremely fit men.
I find the people who talk the most openly about these perfect bodies are like other straight guys I know.
Well, I just think that a really fit man in our minds, I think, makes us assume that this is somebody who is dedicated to what they're doing and they have like certain kinds of like principles that like motivate them to do this and like to make themselves look this way and to take care of their appearance in that way.
But then it's also this idea like this man is big and strong and he's gonna protect me.
That's true, but then also like it represents like the ability to take care of somebody, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, thinking of a modern representation of this kind of himbo, the himbo erectus, and just these like large buff men that appear in movies for men, I would say Vin Diesel, The Rock, John Cena are kind of the closest things we have to like a Stallone or a Schwarzenegger.
But I do think that there is a huge trend within the Marvel Cinematic Universe of like forcing male actors to go through like really unhealthy regimens in order to achieve those types of bodies. Like that is kind of an ongoing trend now with the acting universe. And like when Robert Pattinson said he didn't want to do that because it wasn't healthy, the world was like up in arms about it because they were like, this guy can't even put in the work to like embody the character. Whereas the men who have played Batman before have never had to look like beefcakes, really. Yeah. So I do think that there is this like growing male beauty standard in Hollywood, at least.
Yeah.
That's there. But I don't think that that's necessarily for female viewers. Beauty standards are created by men. Yeah. So the people who are going to enjoy the male beauty standard the most are the people who created it, which are men.
I would say it's one thing that, you know, somebody gets a little like fitter or whatever for a role in an action movie, which yeah is like weirdly our expectations now, but then I would say the men that like are known for their bodies first, like John Cena and like The Rock,
mm-hmm.
they're known for
being big guys,
like not just fit guys, big guys. Like they are more for, I feel like, the male.
Well, they're wrestlers, right? The wrestling community as well is you know, there's a level of homoeroticism when you're watching wrestling.
I would also say, like, for the most part, I was trying to think of, you know, more examples of the modern version of the himbo erectus. And I would say, for the most part, like, it doesn't really exist as much in popular culture. And I'm talking about, like, the dumb, de-sexed, just big guys. I mean, The Rock isn't even de-sexed.
Well, I'm trying to think of what action movies are out there right now, right? Who are current action stars, like Jason Statham, who's kind of, he isn't known for being big. He's known for being, like, kind of wily, like a wiry little kind of guy. Like, he's buff, but he's not.
Yeah.
He's not, like, a big beefcake. And then there's, like, the Fast and the Furious franchise, which, like.
Yeah, Vin Diesel and The Rock.
Oh, yeah. I forgot who was in
and
that.
And I think Cena is also in them now, too.
I was thinking of Paul Walker, but.
But Paul Walker, I would say, fits in my second.
The later category. So just, like, pretty.
Why do we think this is? Like, why do you think we have less of just big guys for the enjoyment of straight guys?
I think it's all, like, era specific, right?
Yeah.
And think about the eras that action movies were kind of blowing up in. So, like, the 80s were under Reagan, who very much promoted, you know, like, the nuclear family, traditional values, masculinity, femininity, and, like, whatever, traditional gender roles. And also, if I'm going to talk about neoliberalism again, like, Reagan really upheld this idea of, like, individual responsibility.
Yeah.
And the individual is, like, the most important subject of society. So, like, these characters are kind of...
Well, this one...
This one individual is going to save the world and, like, solve all of society's problems.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the 90s, I think you saw a bit of a decline with the action movie. And then again in the early 2000s, we saw it again, like, blow up.
Yeah.
And who was in charge? George Bush.
True.
Jr. And so it's like, you kind of see a traditional installment of values. And again, in the early 2000s as well, you were seeing, like, the Iraq War and all of these ideas of fighting for your country, like, heightened patriotism, basically. Moments of, like, extreme patriotism in the U.S. is when you see these movies kind of blowing up. And so I think that is why, whereas, like, now, if you jump to this era, our values have changed. And so we don't need this one individual to save us. Like, I know the Marvel franchise has blown up, but it's taken a different approach.
And I'm not giving them more credit than they deserve, but I would say, like, they actually are more exploratory of those ideas that you're saying. Like, the first Iron Man movie, it's him, I think, kind of dealing with the fact that, like, his money comes from making weapons of war. I think it ends with him being like, I'm not doing that anymore or something. but then it's like, instead,
Marvel's actually all about pacifism.
But it's like, instead of giving money to, like, the military or profiting off the military, I'm just gonna do everything myself as Iron Man.
Which is so funny because the Marvel movies are completely involved with the military-industrial complex.
Yeah, it's a... I'm not
No, but,
th- get
but that's true. Within the movies, I think the values have kind of changed. And it's a little bit more critical or, like, nuanced than it used to be.
Yeah.
In some ways.
But then also, superhero movies are basically always about one person who has, like, the strength of an entire army who can do it themselves.
Who can do it themselves. Yeah, so I actually don't know. But I think classical action star...
I would also say, like, the himbo erectus relies on female desires as, like, an afterthought in the commodification of the male body. Before, when we were being sold the male body, it was for the enjoyment of men. But now that people are tuned into, like, horny women as a consumer base, I don't think that when they're selling us the next, like, hot guy, they're going to ignore the fact that straight women are probably going to be the biggest consumers. So the shift where, like, the male body is being actively marketed to straight women is outlined in Kempley's second himbo archetype, the himbo sapien.
Oh, God.
She
hates us.
She points out the popularity of Chippendales, the term stud muffin, which Lily Tomlin coined, apparently.
Really?
Yeah. And women in the workplace as, like, factors that cause the shift from the himbo erectus to the himbo sapien. So here the emphasis is less on the mechanics of, like, a large male body and more about the man that lies below them. So they're still hot, but in a non-threatening, more domesticated way. The himbo sapien is more attuned to female desires with a capacity for emotional intelligence, even if they're still a little dumb. Their dumbness doesn't come from them being a macho killing machine who has nothing on his brain but the mission at hand. It's so that women can feel safe around them.
you know.
Examples that she uses from her time, 1988, include Richard Gere, Tom Selleck, Mark Harmon, and Ted Danson.
Oh, we watched American Gigolo recently, and let me tell you, Richard Gere
looks great.
That guy, if I've ever understood someone as a sex symbol, like a man as a sex symbol, I was like, that checks out.
And American Gigolo, though, like, he's basically the opposite of Rambo, probably.
He's like, he's kind of like a short guy. Or he looks like one in that movie.
It's not even about his physicality, though. It's like he's so kept, you know.
But it is also about his physicality. Like, he isn't ripped.
No, but he looks
good. He has a nice body, but it's not in the same way.
Well, yeah, now these men don't need to be as big, the Himbo Sapiens. They can have body hair. Body hair is nice.
Wow, lucky them.
But yeah, she's basically saying, like, now that companies and movies and everything are understanding that, like, women also lust after men on screen the way that men lust after women, we're going to target a lot more media and, like, advertisements towards that desire.
The female gaze.
And I would say, like, when we talk about himbos today, this is definitely more of what we're talking about. Even, like, the buffest male heartthrobs of the century have, for the most part, contained some level of softness or, like, approachability that feels more tailored towards women than, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger. So Channing Tatum, you know, got a start in, like, teen chick flick. Like we mentioned before, like, Chris Hemsworth as Thor is a joke.
He, like, same as The Rock. He's kind of like this happy, goofy guy.
Yeah, he's, yeah, Elizabeth Warren's celebrity crush.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Jason Momoa would wear, like, pink velvet suits with a matching scrunchie. I feel like Idris Elba, Daniel Craig, like, those are all guys that your grandma would have a crush on.
And they do.
Yeah.
My mom loves Idris Elba. Her sisters love him.
Yeah. My grandma loves him. So in 2012, the writer Lauren Bands brought Himbo out of retirement with the article "Bimbo with Balls, The Rise of the Himbo." Her hypothesis is that the rise of the female-led comedy caused an increase of himbo representation on screen. So stuff like 30 Rock or Bridesmaids, where you have a woman in charge being witty, she's usually represented as, like, smart, then has this, like, kind of sexy man candy who is, like, her intellectual inferior there, and they get to kind of bounce the jokes off of the guys.
Wait, you're not telling me John Hamm is considered a himbo in Bridesmaids? He's such a dick. He's like a fuckboy.
I guess it's like, in her argument, she's not necessarily calling him a himbo specifically.
He's just like a foil to...
He's like a hot guy that, like, is...
To Kristen Wiig. Yeah.
Yeah, that she's, like, just having sex with. And then in 30 Rock, he plays an absolute himbo. He plays, like, a doctor who Liz Lemon realizes is so stupid, but because he's so handsome, has been given, like, all of these advancements in his career.
You mean pretty privilege?
Yeah. Basically, the episode's called The Bubble, and it's, he lives in a hot person bubble.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then...
Me too, same.
Basically everyone that Tina Fey dates on 30 Rock.
Just... How convenient for her that she, well, that, I mean, Liz Lemon dates all the hottest people.
But same with, like, the Mindy Project, which I think came after this article, but that's just Mindy Kaling playing a doctor and having this rotation of less successful but, like, hot guys.
I just love when, like, creators of shows give themselves really hot counterparts. Yeah. You're like, okay.
I mean, come on, Seth Rogen can date the hottest woman in movies.
Adam Sandler. Okay, sorry, Seth Rogen is hot. That guy has a sexual aura to him.
So, yeah, these women are now, like, in the position also to objectify these men and, like, have them around because they're hot. This is the next step of the shift that Kempley mentioned in her article back in 88. So it's not just that the desires of women consumers are being considered, but now it's like women are making the projects and they're deciding which men are being lusted after and why. So we're able to have a bit more of a nuanced definition of what a himbo is, I guess. They're hot in ways that women find hot. Like, John Hamm doesn't have a six pack in those movies.
It's something that's kind of more innate than it is, like,
yeah,
something you can see on your screen. It's something, it's like an aura.
Do you think that this was actually some, like, progress in any way? Because Bands argues that it is progress in, like, a revenge kind of way.
Well, no, I don't think revenge is progress. There are certain shows and films where you can tell that they're trying so hard to make men the butt of the joke. Like, Sex and the City, for example, it's of its time. And, like, it really does objectify men because it was trying to kind of overcome the way that women were portrayed in society.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're a little like, okay, you gotta stop. But in these instances, like kind of in the 2010s, the media that you're referring to, I don't feel like it's necessarily revenge. I just feel like, why can't women have a man on screen who they find sexually attractive too?
Yeah.
But I don't think that it means that we should take the agency and interior lives away from those characters. I think it's progress if it's like women are seeing aspirational romantic people on screen because that's nice, and it's nice to be able to have that in the way men do. But then at the same time, I don't think that it's progress by making male characters stupid and useless and two-dimensional.
At least in the tone of this article, which also talks about Magic Mike coming out that year, it's 2012, and they're like, no one's gonna watch Magic Mike to learn about the hardship of like being a male stripper the way nobody watched Showgirls for that reason, but we just want to see these hot guys. And I think that is actually what the marketing for Magic Mike was, like, yeah, you just want to see these guys. And then you went and you watched Magic Mike.
And you're like,
Mike,
this is a really smart movie. You see the trailer, and then at the end it says, directed by Steven Soderbergh. And you're like, yeah, this is just going to be eye candy the entire time. Like, and obviously not.
Also written by co-written by Channing Tatum, someone who actually experienced being a male stripper and probably isn't like, yeah, it's just fun and sexy.
Magic Mike is a wonderful movie.
I have not seen it since I was 14, and I was disappointed that it wasn't a stripper comedy.
You didn't watch it with me for the stripping video that I did?
No, I think I was working. Oh, I really wanted to.
Crazy.
The tone of this article, and I think a lot of the media at this time, was just like, yeah, women getting it for themselves. Let's make men little eye candies. And I honestly...
Little eye candies. Little eye,
which I don't know. When you hear about someone like Zac Efron come out and be like, I ruined my body, like having to get fit for like movie after movie, I do think that to some extent, it's still men who are saying, like, this is what you got to do this.
Who are imposing that standard, yeah, on them. Well, because the movies that they tend to be getting the most buff for are men's genres.
Yeah.
So it's like, you don't see Zac Efron getting buff for High School Musical. I mean, he's playing a teenager, so. And he was a teenager. But still, yeah, like, the movies where he has been kind of positioned for girls and women, he hasn't had to get buff for.
I would say, like, one of the big exceptions to that would be men in like Wattpad-y or like romance movies where it is for women. I mean, looking back at like Taylor Lautner being a literal teenager and the way that we objectified him, like, no one really talks about that.
Yeah, was he actually underage when they filmed
New Moon? I think he was 16 in the first one, and maybe by like New Moon, when all the pandemonium, he was like 18 or something.
At that age, it actually really made me sad because I actually thought he was so much cuter in the first movie, and people really made fun of his hair, and I was like, I actually feel like there's something a little racist going on here. The way that people talked about how like ugly he was, quote unquote, in the first movie, I was like, he actually is so cute.
Aww.
And also, that's an indigenous character you're talking about. Like, it's just weird to be like, he looks so ugly with his long hair. Thank God he buzzed it. It's just weird.
Yeah, definitely. And also just weird to think about at this time. The joke was sort of like, all the suburban housewives are taking their daughters to see New Moon.
But it's really for them.
Basically. And it's like, no one's going to watch it for Edward's body. Like, they're there for Jacob and the other wolf.
No. New Moon. Do you remember the experience of seeing it? Seeing New Moon in theaters?
Yeah, I went with my mom.
I made my mom take me to Twilight on her birthday when it came out to the premiere. Anyway, I sucked. But New Moon, I went with like a group of my friends who were in middle school. When Jacob first does his like little wolf reveal, we were screaming.
Were you like, team Jacob?
Jumping out of our seats. No, I was always team Edward because Jacob is like a dick.
I did not like Jacob.
Edward was also a dick though. But then in the scene where Robert Pattinson takes his shirt off, everyone booed.
No.
Which is horrible.
That is pretty terrible.
I think what they were doing was trying to really get a divided fan base.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think it's weird that he was underage. I didn't even realize.
I think he might have been of age, at least when the movie came out. I have to fact check. I think that the early 2010s, late 2000s was really in like ab pandemonium. Like, it was always about like guys with their shirts off and their big, hard abs. And I was still going through puberty and I was like, I don't know what to... I liked like skinny, kind of like gaunt looking guys. I really liked Joseph Gordon-Levitt in 2010.
It was also like the hipster era, right? So I think we were kind of turning away from it a little bit.
Matthew Gray Gubler from Criminal Minds.
Yeah, yeah. He was big.
That was my guy.
My guy was solely Aaron Johnson. And I did not waver.
So existing alongside the himbo of the early 2010s that Bands was talking about in her article was also the skinny alternative boy. Like I said, I was really trying to see if there was like a wave of one in favor over the other. But usually, you know, for every Jacob, there's an Edward situation. This boy is sort of known as like a soft boy, I guess is the best phrase I could use to describe him. So like a soft boy is a more gentle, less overtly masculine guy who might read philosophy and watch art films, maybe like rolls cigarettes or paints his nails.
Me.
Yeah, my, yeah.
No, I stopped rolling cigarettes because people kept roasting me about it.
This isn't Montreal. In the last few years of the 2010s, the soft boy sort of eclipsed the himbo. Timothy Chalamet was like the real heartthrob of like Call Me By Your Name, even though, you know, Armie Hammer looks like that.
Yeah.
You know, Harry Styles for Gucci. He, you know, he's like the hot guy. People were really into Cole Sprouse until like last week.
Yeah, they were into Cole Sprouse until like maybe last year. And then they heard him talk candidly and they were like, I think he's funny.
He's always given me the ick.
But... He gives me the ick, but it's like for my entertainment. So I'm not mad at him about it because I just think it's kind of funny. Feels like a guy I would know.
Yeah.
And I'm not proud of that.
But there was definitely like this kind of wave of these actors coming up that were more...
Timothy Chalamet, though, he very much gets body shamed on the internet about how he looks, though. Like, I've seen that a lot, and it isn't criticized enough, really.
Really?
People are pretty rude about it.
But he's also lusted after.
He is lusted after, but I think now we're kind of going into a wave where people are like, you guys like this little toothpick? Like, it, you know, it's not nice.
Yeah.
Especially because the beauty standard is for men to be bulked. It feels like the shaming of Timothy really plays into that kind of toxic language.
Well, and I wonder if
mindset.
If you think like more recently, like he's been receiving this kind of like body shaming as fast as we like propped up and we're like into this soft boy who was supposed to be a solution to like toxic masculinity and women actually like this kind of guy. We're all now turning on that again. Basically, like there are just so many articles about how soft boys are the new fuck boys.
Are they wrong?
Are they wrong?
Stop typifying.
That's
people.
What I'm saying. Stop being like, this is the new kind of guy that's gonna like save us from the rest of the types of guys.
Yeah, but I just feel like women need some hope to latch onto.
I know. With the soft boy, I think everybody was realizing that just because a guy displays certain types of traits or qualities or has certain interests doesn't mean that he's immune to all of the like things that come with being a man in this world.
Yeah, babe. Like if your boy likes the 1975, it doesn't make him a better person. Actually, at this point, it probably makes him a worse one.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a soft boy would make fun of you for liking the 1975.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think of what soft boy's like.
I feel like Timothy Chalamet in Lady Bird.
Yeah, he also spouts his political opinions in the most obnoxious,
and
like, surface-level way.
Yeah.
And also, he sucks. And another thing.
Yeah, do you think we're to blame for setting ourselves up repeatedly by, like, over-aestheticizing types of men?
No. I thought about that for so long.
I just think that, like, women's media is so much about, this is the thing that's in now. I mean, whatever, that's just how it works. It's like, this is in. And so we're like, we love these guys. We love these guys. No, we don't love these guys. We don't love these guys.
I feel like it's just because women haven't had access to deciding those kinds of things for so long that now we're kind of putting it on warp speed and really like having a little bit too much fun with the naming and the categorizing.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Flash forwarding to 2020, like I said, the soft boy sort of fell out of favor again. And everybody starts talking about the himbo. Some even argue we're in the golden age of the himbo. And all these writers have these really weird definitions of what a himbo is.
Like, even when you say that, I'm like trying to even rack my brain of some sort of overarching big picture look at what our culture is at right now. And I'm having trouble thinking about where the himbos are.
So this is what I'm gonna say. So recent think pieces about the himbo have like de-emphasized his looks and focused more on his innocent, kind demeanor and his naivete, which is something that wasn't really that much a part of Kempley's original archetype. So like Kempley's idea of the himbo sapien was still sort of chauvinistic, but like in a sexy way. They're like airheady a little bit, but they still have some wit. The himbos we're describing today are basically like blow-up dolls. They're just like, he's so nice and innocent and loyal and like doesn't question anything I say.
He's like a lovely golden retriever that is there for you all the time and doesn't say things.
Yeah. I'm going to read you some actual descriptions of the so-called himbo from recent like think pieces on the matter. So Nathan Ma for ID wrote, "Loyalty, it seems, is key to the modern himbo's appeal. He is devoted to his partners and their pursuits while never asking too many questions or sharing too many opinions." Justin Myers for GQ wrote, "A himbo always believes in science, even if he doesn't understand it. And if he's ever unkind or misleading, it's unintentional and he recants almost immediately. He deals with the consequences of his own actions once they're explained to him."
This is like my friends and I had a collective imaginary boyfriend. It was like a friend group boyfriend and he was all of our boyfriends and his name is Derek. And this sounds like Derek.
And then the last one, Marlo Granados for The Baffler wrote, "The himbo accepts that there are some things he does not have answers for. To him, this feels more honest than the masculine farce of pretending to know it all. The himbo is unafraid to ask questions, non-judgmental and non-threatening."
I would like that.
I'm sure there are some pure of heart, simple-minded hotties out there, but I literally can't think of anybody.
Okay, Hannah actually... and I, before we recorded this episode, we were like, so who's like a himbo that we know in real life? And we could not come up with one.
No, because we know human beings who are able to like take care of themselves every day. And the men that they're describing sound like they would accidentally end up in like a Ponzi scheme or something very easily.
Some guy who's going to end up in a Ponzi scheme. He's going to end up in a cult.
He's going to be like, you know what? I trust you and I'm loyal.
I feel like there were a lot of himbos and cults in the 70s.
Probably.
You know?
I wonder if anyone in the Manson family was a himbo.
They tried to make it out like that in the Tarantino movie, and you're like, there's a few too many beefcakes sitting on this ranch.
Austin Butler is Tex Watson.
That's kind of the only person I'm thinking of, and Tex Watson is definitely not a himbo. Known murderer Tex Watson is most definitely not a himbo.
If the main appeal of a himbo isn't even his chiseled chest, which now it seems to be like less about that, if we actually just want someone less intelligent than us who won't challenge us, why do you think that is?
It's reactionary. It's a reaction to how women feel like men behave culturally. And so it's kind of like, let's take all the traits we don't like about men and completely reverse them. And so in doing so, you get these like really exaggerated, made up characteristics of a person because you're just completely reversing all these negative traits and making them positive. And sometimes that just doesn't translate.
Well, like a lot of articles will talk about the himbo a bit as like an antidote to the soft boy, the guy who like reads and has a lot of opinions. So there's an article I read for this about not wanting a man who doesn't read, basically. And it sounds like people are just so sick of men playing devil's advocate, like contradicting them, the performance of intelligence,
the Timothy guy,
that they're like, I just want someone who's going to take everything I say unchecked, unquestioned.
Well, it's a feeling of like women feeling subordinated in their interpersonal relationship and like romantic relationships.
Yeah.
And so it's like a way for them to feel like they have power is by kind of taking all the cultural power away from men.
I know. But like, I really do question if we actually want stupid men.
No, I don't think again, I don't think that this is just made up.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it really is. The imaginary boyfriend comment you made earlier is quite fitting. It is just like, he's like this and he's like that.
And he can also fly. He flies me to school every day and then he disappears into the trees. That's why you guys don't see him.
And I would also say, like, I don't know. I feel like the hottest guys right now are men that don't really exemplify these traits anyways. Even if we're like, it's all about himbos right now. Pedro Pascal and Paul Mescal to me are two of the like hottest guys of the moment. And they're both fit. But seemed like smart and they would take care of you.
Paul Mescal. Yeah, I saw Paul Mescal at TIFF and I can confirm he's so cute.
And like he basically is famous for playing a Sally Rooney character who, if you want to talk about perfect imaginary boyfriends.
But Connell has an interior life. That's like the entire point.
That's true.
The book, he's a very multifaceted person. He's just like sweet.
Yeah.
And for some reason, the bar is in hell that we were like, wow, that is imaginary.
Well, we were like, Sally Rooney doesn't write the kind of men that you would fall in love with.
Oh, she knows. She knows. Like, I was reading that book and I was like, I'm in love with this character.
Yeah.
Well, even thinking about, like, Brendan Fraser, right? And what he's been through and how he's spoken about it. It's like, this man isn't, like, a stupid idiot. Like, he's very multifaceted, a very complex individual. he's had a difficult life, and he speaks about it very eloquently, and it's just like, I think that we can no longer just pretend that he is a himbo. I think he was just playing that archetype because he was hot, you know?
Yeah. So obviously, like, the resurgence of the himbo also, like, coincides with a lot of discourse around bimbos. And we're not going to get too deep into that because it has been, like, sort of talked through in a lot of different places. I don't really want to talk as much about bimbofication as I do want to talk about the sort of, like, redemption of past bimbos as a phenomenon. So first I want to ask you, how do you think the bimbo differs from the himbo?
People don't like the bimbo. Culturally, it was used as a derogatory term against women. And so there's that. They have, like, negative traits, like gold digging. That's, like, a huge aspect of the bimbo. Even, like, in the earliest, like, you know, Jean Harlow, like, Marilyn Monroe movies, they're known for kind of using their whatever creepy childlike innocence as a means of moving up in the world among men, and that was looked down upon at the time. So I think that's one.
For some reason, when you said creepy childlike innocence, I just pictured Betty Davis as Baby Jane.
Oh my god, we should do an entire episode on Baby Jane alone. And it would have nothing to do with rehash.
Nothing to do with anything. I just want to talk about her. But yeah, basically, like, that is the gist of it. Merriam-Webster's definition for bimbo is a attractive but stupid woman. Not vacuous, which is what they say for himbo.
Oh, wow. Really stupid. I mean, maybe it was put in there longer ago, too. So they had less words. I'm kidding.
I think that people do think that the bimbo is stupid.
But she's only stupid when it serves them hating women for hating her for being unintelligent. But she's really smart when it comes to, like, manipulating people.
I feel like with the bimbo, what they're getting at is this ridiculous idea that women have this innate manipulative, conniving,
like, prowess
thing inside of them that, like, you can be a total idiot. She knows what she's doing. By virtue of being a woman, you just know how to get to men and, like, get those things for yourself. And that's what I feel like the bimbo represents. It's like, yeah, we kind of accuse them of being geniuses about very specific things, and that's when suddenly men are helpless morons because it all has to do with sex.
Whereas with the himbo, what defines him is that his ignorance absolves him.
And also the himbo is just so nice and so good that he wouldn't even ever think of trying to ask someone for their money or doing anyone harm because...
Trying to ask someone for their money? Is that how gold digging works?
Like, he's just a nice guy who's just going to be there for you till the very end.
Yeah, genuinely like a pet.
Right now we are in the process of, like, publicly redeeming various women who had previously fallen victim to the label of being a bimbo. Marilyn Monroe, Anna Nicole Smith, Pam Anderson, Brittany, Paris Hilton, just to name a few. They've all been given some kind of a reassessment or even an apology for, like, the way the media has treated them or they were depicted.
In our redemption of them, we have to also overstate that they actually constructed this the entire time and they're actually really, really smart.
Yes.
So there's no, like, room for them to even be unintelligent because it's like, even the unintelligent, quote-unquote, women in the media are actually masterminds. And, like, Paris Hilton created it all. She put on that voice the entire time. Anna Nicole Smith was doing what she was doing. You know what I mean? And even if it's not looked at it in a negative way, we're still kind of putting down the unintelligence by saying that they actually were.
Some of them were putting on roles, were playing to certain things. I mean, that was sort of the whole gist of those early Marilyn characters, is that we, the audience, know that she's tricking these men because she's playing dumb.
But even in the way people talk about Marilyn, they're like, did you actually know that Marilyn read Proust? It's like, okay, why does this have to be part of the project of her redemption? Like, obviously, it's nice to know Marilyn was a multifaceted person, but you should just know that by knowing she was a person. She doesn't have to be some secret genius for you to see humanity in her.
No. I think we, like, take comfort in the fact that some of these women were actually constructing this bimbo character to get them out of, like, a harder situation or to, like, help them with something or to get further in life. And we kind of put it on this idea of, like, the smart bimbo to every single woman who has ever fallen victim to this. I think Britney Spears is a good example. In the Free Britney documentary, there was, like, so many people who were saying she was actually in control the whole time of her creative vision. This is a 17-year-old girl.
Yeah.
She was in control of how her sexuality was being portrayed. She was really crafting this character. And it's like, No, she wasn't. Maybe she had some like creative agency. Maybe she had some good ideas. But at the end of the day, she still has a team of people who are telling her what to do. And she has a society that is asking a certain thing from her. And she knows how to sell records through that.
I think it's tough, though, because I don't like the way that we're pretending that Britney actually knew what she was doing the entire time. Like, obviously, that's a kid. But I do think that it's like in this mission to not overly victimize Britney, because the way we talk about her is very paternalistic. It is. As a society. And it's like, Britney is still a person. She has some agency, mm-hmm. but I think that we're just overcorrecting. Even as a teen, I think Britney was a lot smarter than the media made her out for to sure. be, in terms of, I think she was like an intelligent young girl. There's this whole thing that she actually suggested the schoolgirl uniform for Baby One More Time. Even if she did suggest it in this organic way where they're throwing out ideas, it doesn't mean that the way that they chose to film her and then package her wasn't constructed by a team.
Also, somebody could have said, Britney, maybe not.
Well, yeah, exactly. So it's like, Britney can have agency in these smaller moments within her life, but we do have to acknowledge the way that people preyed upon that.
Yeah, and I think that's the harm of this sort of talk about bimbofication and bimboism as like an act, as like a way of performing, when it's like, yes, a lot of these women were playing to an act. A lot of women were also just subjected to it. But ultimately, the hyperfemininity, the like downplaying of your intelligence, or like the allowing yourself to be suppressed by men or the patriarchy, was all because these women had to a lot of the time. I mean, Paris is one of the exceptions where it's like, maybe she was doing this because people wanted that from her, like the voice and the act. She would have been fine either way. She was Paris Hilton. But Anna Nicole Smith, yeah, she made herself look like that.
A lot of the famous bimbos came from like extreme poverty.
I read Holly Madison, who was one of Hugh Hefner's girlfriends on The Girls Next Door. I read her memoir last
Hannah
year.
Hannah is obsessed with Holly Madison. She talks about her like she knows her.
She's a smart woman. And you look at the ways that she constructed herself to like appeal specifically to like what he wanted, because she wanted to move into the mansion. She had this goal for herself. But like, even then, even when she achieved it, and like even if she was masterminding that, at the end of the day, she was still completely at his will. Mm-hmm. He controlled everything that she did.
Needs to be a middle ground with the way that we talk about it.
Yeah.
Someone doesn't have to be extremely stupid for you to see their humanity, and they don't need to be a genius either. Like, if this is a person that you're seeing in the media, they're a human being, and they should have agency. And I'm sure they have some, but sometimes they don't have enough.
And going back to the bimbos, I don't know. In one hand, I'm like, it's unfair that we are praising men for being stupid, and then like so obsessed with making sure that all of these women that were called stupid weren't actually stupid. But also, we push the himbo.
The himbo is a lovely figment of our imaginations. There's no one definition of him because it's so subjective and based on what each individual wants out of a man, kind of.
At this point, yeah.
And it's bizarre because it seems to be the overarching consensus is that what we want out of men is for them to have no thoughts, which is kind of odd.
I will admit that there was a time, but this was a joke, that on my Hinge profile, it was like, I'll be into you if, and then the answer was, you're sexy and don't read. But that was a joke.
That was funny. And I think you're really funny on dating apps, actually. Hannah has this immediate wit.
You're really overinflating.
No, you're funny. She kind of negs people, that's why. And I think it's a beautiful skill.
Thank you. And I guess that's the thing about a himbo. He'll never neg you.
Yeah, but I don't like that.
That's why I don't think that most people actually want to date a himbo.
Hannah, can you end us off with an official definition of the himbo?
Yes. A himbo finger-painted a portrait of your grandmother for her birthday. His favorite book is Goodnight Moon, although sometimes you have to help him with the bigger words. He keeps in such good shape by rescuing kittens from tall trees. You have to put a harness on him when you go shopping, not in a sex way, but because he's easily distracted and might wander off. He built her house from his own two hands, but can't understand an IKEA manual. He does volunteer work as a model. His favorite food is your favorite food, and when you're not home, he stands and faces the wall like a sim.
That was great. Thank you.
Rehash is hosted by Hannah Rain and me, Maia. It's produced and edited by me, and the intro and outro song is produced by our talented friend, Ian Mills. Thanks for listening.